and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Scott, and I'm surrounded by idiots. No, I have Todd and Ash here today.
Oh, hey there.
Hello.
Tonight, we're going to talk about some things and some other things that we've talked about. I don't know where we're at. But first, I think we're going to discuss some weather, because that's been the big topic of this weekend, and that's resulted in a few calls. Ash.
Yeah, we've had a pretty mild dip into the, quote, winter season here. And then starting on whatever that was, Friday, and then into Saturday, we started to get some snow, which is quite a bit later than what we're used to seeing it kind of show up in our valley here. So we got some freezing temperatures, got some precipitation, and then we got hammered with a slew of vehicle incidents. So with that temperature change, you know, being mindful, if you will, of keeping those pump drains open, making sure that your apparatus is ready to respond, but then also just getting there, like driving out there, like it was slick on the one call. We had some pretty aggressive hills that we had to go up. We had to deploy our trains, so a lot of things were thrown at us over like the last 24, 48 hours with this weather change.
Yeah, and one thing, there was a few times where we were driving and we're like, we can't stop on this hill, we can't stop on this hill. So we were literally blew past the accident to figure out a way to turn around and get to it. Luckily, those ones weren't, we weren't really needed at. There was a couple that we were needed at, though.
Yeah, so I know the other night, so we had a semi-truck overturned down a small embankment as well in our area. We could call to that a couple of times. Usual drive-by callers, you get another report. Didn't really get to do anything on those ones. But then, yeah, when I was back on shift up here with you guys just the other morning, it was slicker than shit, all the roads. It was pretty icy. And, yeah, we did. Well, you guys went out to reports of one rollover. It sounded like it was all GOA. And then later that afternoon, we did another, what, GOA, ambulance terms? Stop making fun of me. Gone on arrival. And
definitely they went to God on arrival. So there, it's like DOA, only like the woke version.
But you know what? That can be a thing. we can make that into one, absolutely. Oh. Anyways. Then we end up doing another rollover vehicle right up on its ass, flipped over on its roof. Into the creek. Luckily, nobody was hurt on that one. That was pretty minor. But while we're hanging out with that one, we called you guys up to that to assist us. We had another one just around the corner up this icy kind of not really forest service road, just a dirt road. And a truck went down quite a steep embankment, very steep embankment. It was probably only about 60 feet down. They were going fairly slow when they went off, but because of the drop, they rolled a couple of times. And ended up on its driver's side down, up against a massive fir tree, and just caved the whole roof line in right around the tree, and pushed that roof line right down to the headrests of that truck. The one occupant was able to get out unharmed. The other one was actually quite pinned. I won't get into too many of the details, but yeah, that occupant was pretty pinned, and it was quite challenging getting a plan with your captain there, Adam, and the team getting everybody in place. We had to get the rope system set up, tools down the embankment, stabilization down the bank. Yeah, I had to tie things off, had to get the basket stretcher down, the firefighters down, and then a ladder, tools, pop the door. Thankfully, we were able to go back to the basics, try before you pry, right? We ended up trying the seat. The seat moved back, and we got just enough release that we needed to get that patient out, and got the patient out safely on the board and up the bank. It took quite a while, but that was definitely a technical rescue, and could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, Scott and I were both out of town for that one, so we were at the mercy of me.
Oh, you just told me you're out of town.
Oh. probably just move this right, just like that. So we were at the mercy of Facebook Messenger updates once everybody was back, and then just seeing a couple photos of the scene once everything was done. But major props to the crew that went out there. It had the makings of being a very challenging rescue. Luckily, like Todd says, it was just kind of one of those back to basics. Let's, you know, do the easiest thing first and then start planning for that A, B, C. And hopefully you don't have to get there. But that, you know, like I said, had very big implications of a difficult rescue. Which even with what it was, it sounds like it was a challenge. But luckily you guys were able to get that space made just with moving the seat and whatnot, and getting the patient out.
Yeah, so initially when we went down, like, everybody did such a good job. It was fantastic. Like, Rob was IC. He got there first with the police and started calling for resources. And then we zipped up around the corner. And then the rescue truck arrived and started deploying everything. But yeah, like, Adam and I were down there trying to come up with a plan, proper patient assessment, and we could only see 30% of the patient. Like, that's how buried they were in that vehicle. Thankfully, turned out to be very minor injuries and walked out with very minor injuries that night at the hospital, so that was good. But we had a few plans in play there with what was going on. So the first one was we needed to gain access first. After the vehicle stabilized with the V-struts, we had to pop the door off. Adam was able to climb the ladder and pop that door off and hand it down to the crew. Then we were able to access. And if we weren't able to gain any movement and separation in that cab, I tell you, I was looking around at where we could put a hydraulic ram and what we could be cutting. Like, we were talking at one point, okay, well, we may have to cut the seats out, but then everything is high up in the air and everything is on a slope. So you're working in a pretty awkward position. To get the tools in, to start cutting that seat out, that would have been a nightmare. And then just to, like, it's not a traditional roof flap or a roof removal. It's pressed right up against the patient, wrapped around a tree, and you got a heavy frame under the truck. Like, we thought about taking the bottom of the vehicle out, the floor out. And could we have? Yes. Would change the extrication plan huge. But that was a possibility as well. And then we even talked about hooking a tow truck up to it. We had four plans in play, and luckily the first one worked out. So props to everybody. Everybody worked so good. It was challenging. Like I said to a few guys, like, I've been doing this for a long time, and that was probably the second most technical rescue to get somebody out. And thankfully, it turned out to be very easy. But where we're going with our instant action plans, I tell you, it was going to be a tough one.
Yeah, I think we should give props to, obviously, everybody that was there. So everybody on the fire crew, two BC ambulance cars on scene, RCMP, and we got our local search and rescue team out there as well. So they're trained up on rope rescue and whatnot. So obviously, being the over embankment, they showed up with a team of however many and ended up assisting on the rope rescue side of it. Just got on the haul line, and when everybody's working, getting those extra hands in there makes a big difference. So yeah, big props to everybody that was there.
Yeah, there was a lot of hands on that haul line as soon as SAR arrived. That was fantastic. And I got to the point where they were just walking back at a nice, slow, steady pace. But the way the system was rigged up, they were coming up so fast, they had to really slow it down. But because normally we're grabbing every extra body to jump on that haul line when you're out of district, right? But it was tough. But yeah, like, the guy Rob and everybody and Matt was there to help set up the ropes. And we had it anchored to your rescue truck. There was an anchor off to one of the police cars in their hitch. It worked out really good.
Yeah, and I realized partway through the conversation that that scenario we did this summer is almost the same scenario, other than the way the vehicle landed. But it was an over embankment vehicle. I think we had two patients in our scenario, and this is only one, but it was almost the same crew, including a senior captain, or actually, I guess you can take away one of our junior captains, but senior to the department, and a junior crew working. So, usually our scenarios happen the week or two after we've done them, but now this one is several months. But anyways.
Yeah, it's almost like clockwork, eh? You can say, all right, we just train this. And I wouldn't say it's everything that we do, but it is not unheard of for us to do, practice something, do a scenario, and then have it come to fruition within a couple weeks. So, and not really thinking of it, and Scott brought it up prior to going live here. And you start looking back at all the similarities. It was Adam down with the crew and a bunch of, pretty rookie firefighters at the time, which it was some of the same ones that were down there with them over the weekend here. So I'm sure those guys are all looking back at that as well, thinking like, man, what are these guys like predicting the future here?
So on that note, we did a scenario last week. We did a scenario with the arena. Because normally we try to do an annual evacuation testing with our local arena. Sometimes it's a hazmat scenario because we have a lot of ammonia, because that's how arenas generate ice. This one was just a straight up fire drill. But of course we want to throw a little twist on it. So the person in charge of the arena, she had asked if we could do this drill like a couple, 3 months ago. We said, sure. And then she actually wanted to include some of the people that were on ice. So the hockey players that were actually on the ice, I think they must've been pre-warned.
Yeah. The parents were pre-warned. The on ice kids were not.
Yeah. I think the parents let some of it slip, because when I poked my head out, I heard one of the kids go, hey, I think it's almost time. I'm like, So someone knew. But anyways, they sounded the alarm and did the evacuation. But what we did as a twist, because there's a concession stand in the arena, and we decided to have it as a fire. So we brought out the battle fogger, talked to the arena people first, told them that we're actually going to blast a fair amount of smoke into the hallway, which was actually a lot of smoke. And we actually just got some new little flickery firelight bulbs. They're like from Canadian Tire or something. They're just kind of like those ambiance. And actually, during the wildfire this year, when I was when we were at your location there, Todd, there was a couple times I went to someone's backyard and I saw those flickering lights, and I had thought the fire had already jumped to the backyard of these people's houses. I was like, oh my god, we have ember transfer. A backyard light. So we've kind of used that knowledge, and we bought these couple light bulbs. And first time we tested them, they look really good inside that little concession stand.
Yeah, when that room was smoked out and you could see the lights flickering in the back end of it, you kind of lose that it's a light bulb in the corner, and it just adds that glowing orange to the backside of the room. Just another bit of, upping that realism, which is pretty sweet. In our scenario, we had somebody that was down in the room, so Kevin, and he was watching the smoke kind of lower down on him, and it was dark, he says. It was really, really impressive. Scott and I were on the outside of the room, but in the hallway, kind of watching that smoke fill up. With that battle fogger that we use, it's so effective. Dumps a ton of that smoke out there. Again, just that whole realism, like we kind of chatted about on our last podcast episode there, making it as real as possible. When we were walking down the hallway from the one side to the other, I actually got a video of it. We might be able to put up, depending, as long as there's no like kids in the background, so we don't have permission to share them. But if we can, I'll put it up there. But it's really, really neat to see the level of smoke and then how difficult it is for the guys and gals to see when they're making the push in, which again, that's what you'll see in a real fire.
Yeah, I saw that video that you guys shared there as well in our chat group, and I thought it was awesome. With that that thick fog from that battle fogger and those lights, it was super realistic. You can see that flicker, that glow in the background. You can't quite make it out what it is. But I think that's a fantastic training aid. And we talk about making training aids as cheap as you can so you can make it as realistic, like you said. And that's a great go-to.
Yeah, so more on the scenario. What happened was, actually, you set it up. So I just came and observed. You go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So like Scott says, the head of Parks and Rec reached out and asked us to do this. They were doing their office side during the day and then said, hey, like, I know every year we do an ammonia session where you guys come on down and we walk through the entire scenario with them. We got one of their techs in full SCBA with us, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then it's always a super fun night as well. But we wanted to do specifically fire. So if there was an actual fire. So like Scott says, we generally don't just go simple. We're like, okay, if we're going to be here for you guys, what can we do to make it something for us as well? Because if it was just a quick evac, 5 minutes from page out, it's going to be, you know, finished. If there's no smoke, if there's nothing, you know, realistic. So we did get that, simulated kitchen fire going there. So, Scott and I were down there and, got basically the go ahead to get the scenario started. Their SOG is anytime that there is an alarm that they have activated or they know it's confirmed, they phone the fire chief direct, just because they've had so many false alarms with their ammonia system. There's been nothing wrong. They get little spikes or whatever and a small little release. And it, you know, triggers the alarm and it's all safe. So, you know, safe sort of parameters, but we still race down there. Generally seems to happen, you know, late at night. So it's the big delay until someone gets there. So they wrote it in, that they call the fire chief immediately as well and say, yes, like this is what we have that we are aware of. So, the alarm went off. They started to do a quick sweep. They were getting all of the players and the parents and spectators off of the ice and out, coming out the alpha side of the building. As they were doing their sweep, they get to the hallway, and even the guy, I don't know if he knew it was like we were going to be smoking that out as much, and he kind of like grabs the door, opens it, and he's like, nope, I cannot sweep the rest of this building. It's too heavily filled with smoke. By that time, Chief Bob was getting on scene because he's coming there direct. So he parks way over at stage and did a really awesome job and kind of started to marshal people away over towards staging or towards the muster point, because this was a rented ice time. They laid down some rubber matting kind of right at the exit of the building, and we had a fake muster point for everybody on skates. And as soon as we had them accounted for, we allowed the players to go back out on the ice because they are paying to be there. But they're going through the head count, and sure as shit, there was one of the kids was missing. Happens to be one of the kids that was attached to one of their workers. So that report gets out there. Hey, we are missing somebody. So now we have heavy smoke coming out of the Alpha Bravo, and we have a child missing. So that's what they're thinking as crews start to arrive. Bob makes a plan, says, Kate, like, whereabouts is the fire? And he's doing his 360.
Was that kid meant to be missing? Or was he just missing?
Like, he was meant to be missing. Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
So it was one of the workers' kids, and we're like, okay, let's throw a kid in there. You know, he's not a player out on the ice. He was just there while his dad was out doing his job. So he was in and out. I guess at nighttime, they're not always like right in the arena. So he's like, yeah, I might have my kid here with me for a bit. And sure as shit, this kid is now, as things start going crazy and there's smoke coming out, he just hides like some kids do. So we let all the players go back in, put all of the parents in one spot. So, okay, this is not in the scenario. Everything else is still live. So the initial truck rolls up, and Bob gives the task to Rob as the first new officer, says, hey, I need an attack and a search. So they brought our new engine, which holds 6. So it was coming in heavy with guys and gals. So setting up somebody on door control right away. Got four people in on attack and search. Went in on a left-hand search as soon as they entered the main entrance of the building, because that's where they could see where the fire was. And then started calling for the extra resources, because now we're inside of this massive building. We're going to need some backup, and we're going to need RIT. So just kind of getting all of that established, and that happened really quick. We basically gave the firefighters a bit of a heads up. Okay, like, we paged them out as the alarm was about to go, and we didn't start the smoke until the alarm started to sound. So we wanted them to be, like, ready to rock. They knew this scenario was coming, just to kind of minimize the overall time that we were going to be there. So things were happening in pretty rapid succession. But, yeah, it was really neat to see. And you know, kind of going back to that NVA, our first new crew was more of our novice crew again. You know, looking back, we had a lot of seasoned firefighters that were here that night. But the initial crew was actually, like, some of our newer members. So it was neat to see them working together. And they actually click really well, because they just came up over the past year or two, you know, working as a core group and then released to the wild with all of us. But they worked really, really well together. Scott, what did you see once the crew got on scene?
They started their search. I think one of them called for a left-hand search, which made the most sense, because that's you can see the smoke pouring out of the kitchen area. And, of course, that's where we said the fire was, so made the most sense to go that way. So they pushed in. A little bit hectic. One of our newer members, he wants to be like a team lead eventually. So this is kind of his first time doing it. I talked to him a little bit afterwards, got a little sucked into the scene. Didn't quite detach. Kind of was the first one in, and he attached himself. Kind of was one of the first ones to the door, ended up finding the patient, grabbing the patient. And then then Rob started calling for, updates. And now he's trying to pull a patient. His radio's kind of tucked in. I'm like, "Hey, man, they're calling you." He's like, "Oh, no." I'm like, "In the middle of doing this." I'm like, "Well, he's calling you, and you better tell him what's going on." And so he's like, So I'm like, "You got more resources." He's like, "Okay." So he called the other guys in, and that kind of freed him up a little bit. I think at one point I said, "Yeah, it kind of sucks being an officer, huh?" He's like, "Yeah." So it worked out well, though. Like, you know, it always amazes people, I think, when you start pulling a live person, because, you know, when you're pulling a dummy, it's like, you treat it like crap. Like, let's be honest, no one treats it like a live patient. As soon as they realize it was a live patient, everything kind of gets a little bit different. And also, like, just trying to move somebody through a small kitchen, it took them a bit. They were working hard trying to move Kevin around and trying to get him through the little opening, and because it was like it got tight by the deep fryer, and he was on the other side of the deep fryer. So that the scenario, like, we always try to come up with like a storyline. He was, you know, frying some fries and oil splashed and burnt him in the face, and it caught the kitchen on fire. So that was the kind of scenario. So I said, once they got a light on him, I said, "You can see a burn more like red around his face, and burning or like charring around his nostrils and his facial area." So it kind of gave him a clue that, like, he's going to, when they get outside with him, that he's going to have issues breathing. So that's what they end up doing. They drug him out. I didn't see what happened when they got him outside, but later on I actually came outside to see what they were up to. And kind of two of our more advanced FR people are up there, and, you know, they got an OP on his chest, and they're getting their O2 ready, and they're looking for a Begwell mask, all that kind of stuff. You know, I said, "Yeah, he has a pulse, but he's very labor breathing." And so they were doing their work out there. So they all looked good. And then the other team started doing their searches of the building. And yeah, overall, it was pretty basic, but, you know, advanced, because it's not in our burn building, and it's in an actual live, real building.
Yeah, I think that always adds something new. Like, not everybody grew up at the arena, so some of the layouts new. Might have been in there once or twice, or had a quick, you know, look for plans or whatever, but just not being in there as frequent as some other people. Their secondary search, when so now they've dealt, you know, the first team's dealt with the fire and dealt with our patient Kevin. Again, Kevin, one really neat thing to mention. So Kevin was saying he was laying down on the ground. We've got like our battle fodder's going. It's smoky or foggy or whatever, and they say the smoke's not terrible, but like let's not, you know, subject him to it for too long. So he's down there with his RZ mask on, and staying out of the smoke as much as possible, keeping his eyes closed and like fully dead weight. He says their packaging was really good. They were really cautious and, you know, making sure that they're not smashing him into, you know, the legs of the fryer, or, you know, cabinetry corners or whatever. But he said he had his eyes closed for most of it. And he's feeling them move and turn and move and turn. And he thought he was ready to come outside, and he opens his eyes and they just got into the hallway, which is maybe like 10 feet from where he fell. So the amount of work it took to move and readjust and move and readjust, he says he got like not pinched, but he's like, I could feel like it was one small snag, but other than that, it was very, very much like they were very aware of what they were dragging him through, but it felt much longer of a pull than what it actually was. Once they got into the hallway, he says they worked really well, as a unit, and got him out really, really fast there. So that was good. Secondary team went in, did another sweep away from the fire area, cleared out all those rooms, went back past the fire area, and then out onto kind of the ice level, where now there's like 30 parents and kids running around. And one of the lead guys there is like, how do we search this area? I'm like, you've come out here, so like now you've made the choice to search the rest of the building. I'll give you a hint. It's none of the parents that are sitting here, but you should probably look up. So there's a couple of rooms up on the high side, so they ended up doing a quick sweep up there and finding the hidden kid. So again, like they're like, how do I know who's in or out, right? Because there's people running around everywhere. So just kind of gave them that quick tip. And so they went up there. They were, you know, really thorough about it. Found him. Hey, we're from the fire, blah, 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 blah. Like, you're missing your dad's right outside. They were really awesome with the kid. And then came back down and they're like, hey, like, what do you like kind of break from the scenario? Like, what do you want us to do? I'm like, you know what? Like, if this is real, what would we do? He's like, we head for the exit. I'm like, yeah, so let's go out the door over there. Let's not drag him back through the smoke like we usually would, because his dad is still over there at the muster point. So let's take him right outside. He's like, perfect. So they ended up going out the other way. And everything was pretty much over there. We had to ventilate the building because it was still pretty foggy. It's crazy to see how fast it can start to dissipate, but in all of the dead airspace, which is, you know, good to see where the dead airspace is there, because it just sat there for a substantial amount of time. We had everything packed up. We brought teams back in, did a debrief, and you could look on both ends of the hallway, and there's still just a little bit of smoke that's hang or haze or whatever, fog that's just hanging there. But it's nice to do the debrief of your scenario right on scene, away from the trucks. I think there's a shit ton of value there. And having that, that kind of space where we could have a chat as a group there, and then bringing in Carol from Parks and getting her take on, you know, hey, this is good for her to see. Like, this is kind of real world what our response is about to look like for you guys, us to see what they're going to be bringing to the table, what their SOGs are. For their personal safety and their public safety, it was good to work a full scale scenario with them. Because I mean, that building's old as shit. They generally they were well overstaffed. They're like, yeah, like anybody that wants to come can come. So I think they had four or five members on. Generally, it's only going to be one. So one person is going to be trying to do a lot of that alone. Will likely get most of the people in the main area out of there quickly. But what's the rest of the building? It's an old building, and there's a lot of rooms in there. So yeah, I think that was a pretty good look at what a real situation there would have looked like, as long as it's small and contained.
Yeah, because it was pushing out of the, like, even our battle fogger, the smoke was pushing out of the, like, the soffits and stuff. Like, it was out of the eaves of the building. That's it was, like, it was pressurizing in there, and then finding the escape routes, and it was coming out of the exterior. And it's not, like, right, the room we were in was, is not on a wall, an exterior wall. It's, like, inside the building a little bit. So it was finding little spaces to crawl out of. So it just tells us right there how quickly that would have actually, if that was a real fire, how it would have found those spaces inside the ceiling and pushed its way into the structure. And then, yeah, like you said, it's an old structure.
Like the one video that you guys had, it looked like the battle fog with all the smoke. And I'm guessing because of all the cold and the humidity in there, it was actually like it was almost like a thermal layer. There's this white smoke hanging about 3.5-4 feet off the ground, nice flat layer. I thought that was really cool in the video, especially with that simulated smoke.
Yeah, and actually, when the crew came in, I told him, I said, you can see the smoke layer. I said, just imagine that is now, that's black smoke. That's not like this nice white laminar smoke. It's black and it's pushing. They're like, okay. So they just kind of painted that picture for them of what they're expecting, but they could see the smoke level. So I said, you guys got to get below that because I'm going to tell you right now, that's actually not the way it looks. It's much darker and hotter.
Yeah, I think adding that simulated smoke is so helpful. Like we just, our last practice, we were doing VEIS the week before. Then last week we did searches and we went up to a desert park racetrack where it's like, there's a big common area room and old, like other little rooms where the betting offices were. And then some squash courts and a gym and stuff. And we were, of course, just telling everybody we had the lights all out. Okay, the smoke level is going to be down here, like down low. You're going to be able to visibly see underneath it, but you only got about, 2.5-3 feet that you can see. But like by throwing that smoke machine in there and having that white thermal layer, it's fantastic. It's just, we couldn't smoke out that building because it's fully alarmed and it would have been a nightmare to try and sort that out. And it's very, very high ceilings. Like our smoke machine had to be running for like 6 hours before we got in there. But yeah, I think I think we need to upgrade to a battle fogger.
Yeah, that battle fogger is going to be maybe sponsor. No, just kidding. No, we've been using it ever since we bought it for the seminar, and I want to get another one now for some other stuff we're going to do. So yeah. Todd, I guess you already explained what you did. So maybe talk a little bit about your VIS training, if you want.
Yeah, so we're practicing some vent enter isolate search. So we use our hose tower. So we're able to throw a ladder up to the second floor and just running everybody through the system. And we had some of our new recruits going through it as well. And we actually used the recruits to be the victims in it because we wanted them to experience what it feels like to be carried up over the windowsill and down a ladder. So we're doing the full victim removal. So yeah, basically the same as we've talked in the past. So, we'll get information that this is a scenario, two-story home, fires, wherever, and we need to go in and do a search of what we think is the bedroom here. This is the last known location of somebody missing. So got the crew in through the ladder. We taught them how to break the glass with the ladder. And then place it just below the sill. First guy goes up, the tool clears the window, puts his tool down in the floor, kind of feels around the floor, pops in. Second person was right up there on their ass and immediately after with the thermal imaging camera, scanning, giving them guidance where to go. They beeline it to the door, isolate, right? And then do the search. And it was always hard. Like the first evolutions, everybody would see the victim or the patient, and they'd be like, oh, and they'd go straight to them, and they wouldn't close the door right away. The whole purpose of this is we have to isolate that room right away, because by not closing that door right away, we've got a flow path, and it's just going to get worse and worse. And like we said to them, like, what if they're a very large individual, and now you need more help getting them out? So it's not very easy being one person in there dragging them out to that windowsill. So really reinforce the skills of getting in there as fast as you can, having your second person in there with the thermal imaging camera off the ladder, guiding them, giving them verbal commands, where to go, what they're going to be finding as they're coming in if they can't see. Hopefully you'll be able to see a little bit. And then isolate that room, grab the victim, radio out, call for help. Then that person with the tit can bump in, and then that third man comes up the ladder. And then two people can prop that person up to the windowsill and do the arm carry down the ladder. So really, really good skills because we haven't actually practiced pulling people down out of a window for a while either. So that was pretty good. It's always a little challenging when we're doing that simulation because we're always in our bunker gear and the jackets always get caught up on every rung as you go down, and it's a bit of a pain in the ass. But again, really good skills just to reinforce, what it feels like to be going down as a victim. And then also as, sorry, I should be saying patient, not victim. And just reinforcing that one person can safely carry somebody fairly heavy and large down the ladder safely.
Yeah, I think speaking of a larger victim or patient is really key. Sometimes in some of our training evolutions, we'll use our smaller dummy for the skill set, less of the hard work. In our scenarios, we'll use the larger dummy or a person to kind of throw that real world realism back in if it's not always going to be a kid. Hopefully it's never a kid. But it's if you only train with lightweight, when you get to a 200 plus pound person that's like dead weight, it's not that simple. I'm just going to grab and throw this person over my shoulder and easily pass out the windowsill and easily down that ladder. No, you need that bump up. You might need another one. Like, you might be the second person and you might be the third in just to effectively get that rescue going. Get those skills dialed with a lighter weight. So you've got that muscle memory of, getting in there, getting that door isolated, doing your search, getting the patient out. All that's great. But like real world, if there's anybody of size, any one of us, you'll need at least one extra person in there, maybe even two. So being aware of, weight and what that means for resources is really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about the scenario as well as if, if it's a large person and you need more help to get them up, that early radio communication out to IC saying that you need more assistance to get that person out. So at the bare minimum, if you can at least prop them up and throw their kind of upper torso and head out that window for that fresh air, and then we can be calling for more help. That more help could be another ladder right beside them and having two people up on that ladder and two people carrying them down now. Because if it's a very large person, you may need that. We didn't have time to actually practice that skill, but I think that's one that we're going to be potentially doing this week in one of our scenarios. It's just troubleshooting, thinking outside the box, right? Like, okay, by isolating that flow path, by closing that door and isolating that room, you're creating that little safety zone. Get them in that fresh air. And if you have to kind of shelter in place for a few minutes for that other team to get there and help you, you may have to, depending on the patient's size, right?
It's good to see VIS, whatever they want to call it now, is getting trained so often now. Because I remember back when we first started it, there was only a few of us doing it, a few different departments doing it, and it's kind of frowned upon, like, oh, it's so dangerous, you can't do that. And it's so much more beneficial for the patients. Safety and rescue and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it should really be kind of a go-to search too, right? Because realistically, it's probably one of the safest searches you're going to be doing, and it can be the most effective. Like obviously on the intel, like the reason why you're doing this, it all stems from your 360 and your IC size up and that information we're getting. So we're always harping on people to say, hey, stop bugging the IC on the radio. Hey, where do you want me to park? Where do you want this? Like, no, figure shit out. Park, because that IC is getting their story together and say, okay, where was the last known patient? Hey, we got time of day. How many vehicles? It's a family home. What's missing here? Put the pieces of the puzzle together. And then you may be doing that window. You may have another team going to do another window simultaneously. Like, there's a lot of moving parts if you have to actually VIS a couple of rooms quickly. So, and then we talked about you know, just being efficient with your air consumption as well. Because if we're low on manpower, which a lot of us are in those first moments of that working structure fire, that first team, you may go, you may ask that one room, now you're going to that next bedroom, maybe a third bedroom. So it happens.
Cool. Searches.
Yeah, so then searches as well. So we did... We did our scenario on some searches. So we broke into two big groups, and we did just a quick basics, back to the basics for primary search stuff. Quick, fast, effective searches. We took in a hose line because we wanted the scenarios. Okay, you are designated as your search team, but you know your attack team is still looking for the fire. So you're going to bring, you got your hose line in this scenario, and you're doing these searches. And it was quite a broad building that we're searching in. So just worked on, you know, the communications, your entry procedures, door control, going in and moving effectively and fast as a team. So first firefighter was your nozzleman. Second firefighter, was helping with the hose, and your third is your officer or, officer in charge with thermal imaging camera. So, you know, you open that door, the officer with the thermal gets in down low. Looks for that life fire layout with the thermal, doesn't see any victims. Yeah, we're good to come in, brings your whole team in, get that whole team in that door. Like everybody would start bunching up in the first scenario. It was too close to that door and that door was open for way too long. So you got the real estate. You just checked with the thermal. You can see where you're going. So bump in that first 10 feet away from that door, close that door, you know, get out in front of your nozzleman and your team so they can look over your shoulder through that screen of your tick. And get the layout of the building and then decide, are we doing a left hand or are we doing a right hand? You're going to dictate where you're going, what you're seeing, and the information you have at hand. Then relay that to IC. Say, hey, yep, search team one, we're going to be doing a left hand search. Okay, copy that left hand search. And then boom, push. So we worked off the wall. We talked about doing an effective search pattern and lines of communication like sight, touch, sound, right? Voice. Spreading out, just doing a nice primary search. Once you find a door, same thing, door procedures. Person with the tick would jump in, scan that door. Firefighter would enter that room. Okay, I want you, and then you do an isolated search, door control. Back, it's basically like almost like a VIS, right? So door control. He does a quick orientated search with that. What I like doing is, I like having the nozzleman just anchor and hold at that door in the hallway. And then the two firefighters go in. So your officer in charge with the tick right at that door. And he can guide that firefighter doing that orientated search really quickly. And, hey, you're coming up to a bed. Yeah, keep going. Hey, you got a window. And also closed loop communication. So as I'm searching, hey, I got a couch. Hey, yeah, you got a couch. You're searching. Okay, couch is clear. Hey, I got a window here. Copy that. I got a window. Like just really, really close that loop of communication. So everybody's painting that picture of what you're finding in case you need to make that into a safe zone or you need to go into an exit now and go at that window. You all know as a team, that's where your window may be. And then we talked a little bit about working off the hose line and getting away from the wall. So if you need to bump out off that wall and be completely detached, you're going to communicate that. Hey, yeah, bumping out off the wall. Copy that, bumping out off the wall, you know, 90 degrees. Start from your feet off the wall. You push out to where you need to do, search your area. Don't turn around, but come right back to that wall so you're not getting disorientated. And then, again, communication. Yeah, back on the wall. Copy, back on the wall. Okay, let's keep going forward. And you keep pushing down. And then we threw some victims down as well. So one of our guys would drop. That wasn't in that search scenario. And they'd find the victim. And then communicate, package, and bring them out. The one thing I really wanted to reinforce was when we find that patient is identify if it's a small patient or a large patient or an adult. You know, if it's an adult, hey, I've got a person. Yeah, it looks like we've got a large person or an adult. And then do a big, wide search around them. Because if it's an adult, think of it, if it's my house and you're finding me, I'm probably going to my kids' bedrooms to find my kids. So there might be a second victim with them or very close to them. So do a nice extensive search right around them and then roll them over, make sure there's nobody under them or in their arms, and then package and drag them out.
on your guys' scenario using that building, you said you were advancing a hose line. Were you charge hose line or?
So that night we were just doing a uncharged hose line. Our calf truck, we can charge it with air. So we're going to do that with the scenario coming up. But we didn't screw anything up in the calf system. Only a couple guys know how to do it really well. So, yeah, that's what we're going to do the next time. Cause we don't have the fitting how you guys do with the air bottle. But yeah, we can do that with a calf truck. So that's where we're going to be looking for the next time. Cause it's so much easier. Dragging a fucking limp dick line through the thing is just, it's not as realistic. Like you're getting the basic skills, but dragging the hose line it's awkward.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention was the, and during our scenario, Ash brought his air compressor attached to a, you had quite the system going on, a generator, air compressor, and then we had the hose line on there. And so when the engine actually arrived, Ash grabbed the engine driver, the driver from the engine, and said, "Here's your new fire engine, back to my pickup truck, and you have to run the airline." So that always works pretty well. It does get like kinked and stuff, like because at one point I had the nozzle operator in the fire room with me, and I was like, "Well, hit it." He's like, "What?" I'm like, "You should be able to open that line." And he opens his like, "Meh." I'm like, "Oh, never mind." It's kinked like three times back. Around the corner, because it's not like water where it's like, you know, it's heavy and it's got some pressure, but it does give that roundness to the hose and, you know, makes it be able to move a little bit better. It does move more like a real hose. Yeah.
It's a lot more efficient when you're doing that, especially when you're coming back. Like if you didn't find a victim, you're bringing your nozzle back. Right. And just dragging that uncharged line, it's not as realistic. But then we also talked about, you know, hey, cause one team, they found a patient, and they started bringing them out, and the one guy was still bringing the nozzle back. Like, why are you bringing the nozzle back? What's your priority right now? The patient. Drop your nozzle. You've already got your attack team in there. Like, you're not, unless you're actively fighting fire where you're going to need protection, drop it, get that patient out. That is now your priority. Haul ass.
All right. Any more for any more? I think we're doing pretty good. Okay, Gestratos. Ash, Modus.
Yeah, Modus, we give these guys props every week. Claim to fame is going to be their snagger tool. They have a ton of stuff in their repertoire now. As Todd's reaching for, they got their X gloves. That's version 1. I think they're on 2 or 3 now. I think it's pretty much open to the public. You can buy them. So they got all their safety and cut resistance ratings in play now, so that's great. Force entry kit, they've got some passive entry textiles. Amazing group of guys to work with. We're like a bit of their brain trust, where they like throw crazy ideas at us, we throw crazy ideas back, and next thing you know, something's coming in the mail for us to have a look at. So have a look at their gear. They are 50% of them is a firefighter. You know, and it's a great Canadian based group that's actual firefighter tools for firefighters. Check them out online, check them out on our YouTube. We have some videos out there. Their social medias has a ton of stuff. If you like what you see, which you should, use discount code GTFF5 for 5% off your order.
Just checking online, and yeah, the X gloves are active on there now. Boom. And actually, it looks like at this time, if you buy a pair of X gloves, you can get a free vehicle kit or something like that. So, yeah, there you go. Todd, Stop the Bleed.
Yeah, Stop the Bleed is very important. StopTheBleed.com or .ca. They'll go online and find out if there's any trainers near you in your area, or if you want to become a trainer, they can give you that information as well. Of course, direct pressure, wound packing, and tourniquet application. Make sure you're carrying a good tourniquet. Make sure it's out of the wrapper. Carry more than one. Have one in your bunker gear as well. We have played with them before. We put them over bunker pants and that stuff. It does work. Of course, best practices, we try and remove the clothing, but you can put it over top of it. And yeah, just train. Make it as realistic. Put all the stop-to-bleed training in all your scenarios. Super important.
Just Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yeah, Wolf Tree Coffee out of Oliver, BC. We've been working with them basically since seminar. Came out with the initial attack plan. I've been loving that. Amazing coffee. They've got a bunch of blends roasted locally here. Delivery up and down the Okanagan Valley, and will ship anywhere. So check them out, wolftreecoffee.com. They're also on Facebook and Instagram. If you purchase the initial attack, $2 per pound is donated to the Honor House and Honor House Society on a ranch, which is an amazing cause that is there for first responders and military men and women.
Tanner Wilson, Todd over there.
Tanner Wilson Band out of West Coast. West Coast, Canada. Down in Lower Mainland. They are down in Nashville now for, sounds like, quite a bit of time. Writing new songs, making new songs. We're a big supporter of them. They're fantastic. They've come and played with us for us a few times now, and everybody just huge props. They've got a couple new songs out, so make sure you find them on all your listening platforms and search them up, and yeah, have to find out when they're playing and go see them.
Yeah, I got my Spotify year in review, and they were one of my top listen to bands for the year. So we don't just shout out, they are in the regular rotation. Amazing music. So yeah, I'm absolutely check them out.
And lastly, I think, it's us. So you can check us out on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Worlds. YouTube, on X.
Mm-hmm.
No, not on X. We might be mentioned on X, but it's probably for something bad. So check us out on those platforms. Give us a like and a share. And if you don't like us, don't do that, I guess. Don't put any things on. No one-star ratings. Shirts are still for sale. Not any of the shirts we're showing right now. It's our Moose shirt. And check that out on Tomlinson Stores. It's just DTFF Store, right?
Yeah, yeah. DTFF Store. The link is on our Facebook site, so you can go check that out. And, reach out to us. We'd love to sell you guys some shirts, especially coming up for Christmas. Talk to your department. It's a pretty awesome Moose shirt. People really like it. So check it out.
Right on. Ash.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Todd.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. Good night. And stay safe. Stay DTFF.